All right, so this week, you know, some weeks when I don't have too many great shilas, I'm like on Thursday afternoon, just like davening that someone comes over and asks something good. This week I got a lot of great shilas, but most of them began with the words, please do not say this shila publicly. So, out of options on that. But one shila that came up actually last week, and another one that just came up today as I was... As I was asking the Ribbono Shel Olam to send some my way. So the one that came up last week is that I got a call from a lawyer friend of mine who's representing a frum person, I think a frum Jew from Muncie. And this frum Jew from Muncie is in a legal dispute. I don't know the details exactly, nor am I sure that the details matter really, but a legal dispute with another frum Jew from New Jersey, from somewhere in North Jersey. So it's a monetary dispute. The lawyer is representing the person who is being sued, and the lawyer tells me that his client is absolutely not at fault and is innocent and is certainly not obligated to pay any money, but at the same time, he advised his client that to go to court and to fight this battle and to to prolong the issue will end up costing him more money than to just agree on a settlement. That agreeing on a settlement will actually be a cheaper way to go, even though ultimately he's right and he doesn't really owe the fellow any money, which is a hard pill for the client to swallow. But at the end of the day, he doesn't want to lose more money than he has to. So he's going to agree to a settlement. The other party, and again, I'm only hearing from one side over here, which is if it were a Choshen Mishpat case, you absolutely cannot do that. Not only can you not only hear from one side, you can't even hear from one side first without the other party present. Right? But he agreed to a settlement because the lawyer fees and the time fighting would cost him more than the settlement. Now, as part of the agreement, this this other fellow who was suing him insists that the following line be included in the agreement. Here's the line. This mutual release is effective in this world and in the world to come in the Beis Din Shel Maila. That's what the person insisted gets written in the agreement. So the fellow wants to know, if I sign that, meaning essentially it is a shakedown. Meaning here's this guy that's asking me for money that he knows he's not entitled to, and he's only asking for the money because he knows that the cheapest way for me to go is to settle with him, and he wants to include in the agreement that he's pater in Beis Din Shel Maila. So is that binding? If I sign such an agreement, is he taka pater in Beis Din Shel Maila? And what if I'm not mochel the guy? So am I allowed to sign that, or is that sheker to sign such a thing when I'm not actually mochel the guy? That was shaila number one. Shaila number two is a little bit more of a joke, but when you think about it, it's somewhat interesting. And again, we're going to a new format of just two shailas instead of three. So someone came over to me in the basement this afternoon, a couple of hours, about 2.5 hours ago, and he told me that he was sitting in front of two people in shul or somewhere, and he overheard the two people talking, and one of them said, oh, what do you say about Ploni, about so-and-so? And the other guy says, it's Lashon Hara, let's wait till after Yom Kippur. So that was the response. Yeah, Lashon Hara, we should wait till after Yom Kippur. So I got him thinking, is there such an inyan that if you're going to do an Avera anyway, and it's just a matter of timing your Avera, that it's worthwhile to delay your Avera until after Yom Kippur rather than doing your Avera now? Is there value in doing that? Or is it, if you're going to do the Avera, what do we care when you do the Avera? If you do it now or you do it then, maybe Adraba, maybe you should do the Avera Dafka before Yom Kippur so you can get your Kapara for the Avera. Remember, I was once listening many years ago, to sports radio as I was driving and doing errands, and it was before Why You Torah had an F. And Steve Summers, anyone became, you don't have to admit, okay. Steve Summers is a Jewish radio host, was hosting the show, and someone called him up, and everyone always likes to talk half Yiddish with him or whatever. So someone calls him up and says, Steve, I have a big problem. The Yankees are playing on Yom Kippur. What am I supposed to do? I got Yom Kippur and I got the Yankees. And Steve said, without even a moment's delay, it's very simple. you watch the Yankees, and then you gain instant atonement, right? So that was his etza. So the shaila is, maybe is it better to do the Aveira? He's going to do the Aveira, right? That's not the question. So is it better to do it now or better to do it after Yom Kippur? Okay, so those are our two shailas. So shaila number one, the mechila that the guy wants written into the contract in the world to come in the Beis and Shalmaila. And shaila number two, is it better to do the Aveira first or after Yom Kippur? First one? First shaila? First shayla, all in agreement? Yeah, first shayla. Okay, so let's start with the first shayla. What he's essentially asking for is mechila, but he's trying to force a mechila, right? I mean, he's trying to force the fellow to be mochel. Now, in general, there are two types of mechila when it comes to someone who is who's doing something that's costing you money, taking advantage of you in a financial way. First, there's the actual mechila of the mammon. Meaning, if you say you're mochel the money, then you're mochel the money. Meaning, then there's no going back on that. There's no insincerity in that. Meaning, even if you didn't really want to be mochel the money, once you say you're being mochel money, the guy doesn't owe you any money, and that is binding both in Beis and Shalmata as well as Beis and Shalmaila. And why is this the case? Because Dvarim Shebelev, and Dvarim, I can't tell you that I'm mochel the money, and then I'm going to come back to you a week later, I changed my mind, I'm not mochel the money, or I never really meant it. I can't tell you what you meant, I could tell what you said, and if you said you're mochel, that's the end of the transaction, the chov is gone, he doesn't owe you any money. That certainly can't be mochel the money, and then hope that Beis and Shalmaila will punish the guy for stealing the money. Right? That's pretty clear. I once had a shaila, a guy called on Som Gedalia, a guy called me up, and he told me that he had a guy that owed him $10,000, and he had lent this fellow, this guy Binyamin, lent this fellow $10,000 10 years earlier, and it was due 1 year later, and he called him up a year later. You know, do you have my money? No, I don't have it yet. He called him up every month or so, or every few months. For a while, I don't have it, maybe soon, and after a few years, he just realized, forget it, this guy's never going to pay me back. And then it came on Rosh Hashanah, Binyamin is sitting there davening in shul. He knows that Reuven owes him $10,000, and he knows that Reuven's never paying him back the $10,000. So Binyamin thinks to himself, or even says, I think he told me, he said, he enunciated, he verbalized, right before davening, I am mochel Reuven the money, because he didn't want Reuven to have chasima l'ra on his account, or chasima l'ra on his account, you know, gzar din l'ra on his account, because he owes him the money. Binyamin comes home after Rosh Hashanah, Tzom Gedalia, mail comes, he opens up the mail, $10,000 check from Reuven. So he wanted to know, once he was mochel, is he allowed to cash the check? That was an interesting one, but if he now in that case he was mochel to nobody in particular. I mean, he didn't tell Reuven that he was mochel, so that's a little different. But if you tell someone that you're mochel mamon, then there's no going back on it. But then there's another element over here. It's not only the money, but it's also a ben adam l'chavero and an avera to the ribono shalom to steal money from someone. So, meaning there is the personal anguish that the guy is suffering. If you're out a lot of money and you think that that this guy's taking advantage of you, so there's that personal anguish, and he needs mechila for that as well. It's not just a mechila of the mammon; he needs mechila for the avera that he did, for the avera ben adam lechavero. So, can you control what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does to the guy in that regard? In the Mateh Ephraim, Tzeh Mateh, he quotes a Pri Chadash. By every aver ben lechavero, there's a chelak that's ben lemakom. Kigon imbizo bedvarim. Hare avar al v'haftal reacha kamocha. If the guy was mevaziu, not only was it pogea you, but it's v'haftal reacha kamocha. It's a mitzvah satora. Okay, also calls man shalom. Here it says chavero gam chelak hamakom einu mischaper. And as long as you didn't make good with the other guy, so you didn't make good with HaKadosh Baruch Hu either. And then he says that he found this yesod in a number of sources, and he found in the Chuvus Marshal that Hanusach Hamechila Shemevakshim Chatasi Leploni Vilashem Velo Ibcha. That you say first Chatasi Leploni, because only when you get the Mechila from Ploni, only then is Hashem interested. In addition to that, after mechila, the satan can still be mekatreg on the fact that there's discord, that there's fighting between Jews. The Torah writes in Simtaf Reish Vav that the purpose of asking mechila on Erev Yom Kippur is so that she leiv kol Yisrael shalem kol echadim chaverim v'lo yamakom satan lekatreg aleihem. Meaning, it sounds that it's not just a technicality that you need to secure my mechila. Right? Get me to say those words. I am ochel you. No, the Torah writes that the purpose is that leiv kol Yisrael shalem kol echadim chaveru. Everybody has to genuinely, in their hearts, actually not have hakpados on other people. In order that you don't give makom to the satan to be mekatrig. That's what the Sfasemis explains. That's why the Gemara in Yumadav Pezayin tells us that Rav went to ask mechila for 13 years straight on Erev Yom Kippur, even though he had done nothing wrong. Because sometimes, even when you do nothing wrong, it's a good idea to ask Mechila, because he was trying to avoid Machlokas. Meaning, Mechila is not only about absolving yourself of the Aveira, it's ridding Klal Yisrael of Machlokas. Now, in that regard, putting a line in the Shtar that says, this is not binding, and basically, making it such a legal agreement, doesn't really help if the person can't stand you and feels like you're forcing him into this mechila. So it would seem that that on that level it wouldn't work. Sfasemis writes in Yuma Pei Zayin, Ikbid Rabbi Chanina Azal Rav Legabei. So he says, Hadi Ikbid Rabbi Chanina Avakal Shloim Mechuyav Lachzor B'Shvilo. I'm sure you could do Masha Hikbid Azal Rav Lepaiso. Dabi Yoma Kippurim Ikak Peda She Yispayis Echodim Chaveiro. Ve'ein afkusa imat tzedek imo b'masha hikpid alav olo. Mikol makom tzrichon l'spayis. Doesn't matter who's right, who's wrong. You just have to make sure that you make peace. I get this shaila every year around this time of year. People calling up, either with difficulty being mochel somebody, or yes, I'm willing to say that I'm mochel them, but I'm not willing to feel it. I'm not ready to feel that I'm mochel. Or a person who says, I did nothing wrong, but I know that person is never going to ask me for mechila. So what do I do? And I know that there is, and it's killing me that person has wronged me, and that we have a machlokas going on, and he's never going to ask me for mechila. What am I supposed to do about that? And what's the answer? What are you supposed to do about that? Ask him for mechila. Ask him for mechila. I would say better than forgive him. Ask him for mechila. And you know, open that door. Because the point is that neither of you should feel that way toward each other. The according to the way the Torah understands it, it's not only about securing the mechila; it's about making sure that all the hard feelings are gone. I had a situation recently where someone I know went through some difficult times, and we were talking to Moreno Rav Shechter Shlita, and he said that maybe the person should look into whether how to get rid of Ayin Hara in these kinds of situations. Not like, you know, some lady pouring lead or bubbles or whatever. You know, he means like there's like a Masorah in certain Ravari Levine's family. There's a Masorah, Adayom, that goes back to Chaim Balazhin, about how to, he said, you got to speak to Rav Goldwicht, and he'll give you the details. So I asked Rav Goldwicht, and Rav Goldwicht said, well, before anything else, does anybody have hakpados on this person? Right or wrong, do they have hakpados on this person? I said, I think so. It could be that some of the people have hakpados on this person. So he said, before anything else, the person has to ask mechila from anyone that has hakpados on them. So that hakpados aren't necessarily justified. It doesn't matter. And the idea is that there's a lot of damage that is done just by strained relationships. Then Rav Golik said, then you got to go to Eretz Yisrael, and there's a grandson of Rav Levin who has a thing that he could do, and I have no idea. I don't know any of the details. Now, is in general, when it comes to mechila, is the idea to ask, so we've been emphasizing the idea of just creating a sense of shalom. But there is a discussion whether the idea is to ask for mechila or to receive mechila. Meaning, is the point technically to erase the aveira or to repair the relationship? So there is some further discussion on this beyond just that diuk in the tour. There's a tshuva about this topic in Rabbi Yamin Zilver in Az Nidbru, Chelet Beis Simin Samachay. Rabbi Yamin Zilver was a posik from B'nai Brak, a Talmud of the Chazon Ish, and they say the Chazon Ish used to refer to him as Binyamin HaTzadik. So where is it printed that the Chazon Ish used to refer to him as Binyamin HaTzadik? So I found in one of Rav Binyamin Zilber's tshuvas, he yells at the Shoel to not say that, to not tell that story. He says, because the Shoel said, I think the Shoel was Rav David Cohen from Brooklyn, and Rav David Cohen said, L'chvod Hagon, the one who the Chazanish said about him, that he's Binyamin HaTzadik. So he said, Rav Binyamin Zilber responds, you can't believe everything that you hear, and I have to make a macha, that you can't believe these stories, especially about the Chazanish. They tell a bunch of Baba Maises about the Chazanish, and this is just another one of them. But it was Yadua, everyone knew that the Chazanish used to call him Binyamin HaTzadik. So, but Binyamin Zilber has a whole tshuva about this, and he explains that you always need to ask whether it's going to be secured or not. He says, first of all, it's a technical element of your own tshuva process. Adshe Yisfayis is just the sheer of how much bakasha you need. Meaning it's not about securing the mechila necessarily, it's part of your tshuva process is going through the process of asking, which is interesting, meaning it shows that there's better and worse mechila. There's better ways to ask mechila and worse ways to ask mechila. It's not only about, as long as that guy does the thing before Kriya Shema Alamita and he's mechila, then I'm good. He says Tefillah Zaka and he's mechila everybody, then I'm good. No, there is a certain process you have to go through personally to ask for mechila that helps you in your own personal tshuva process. There's a certain busha that's involved. I just got a shayla this morning. I'm telling you, people are constantly worried about this. Baruch Hashem, they're worried about this. But someone called me this morning, said, I have a relative who's going to ask me for mechila, and I know what they're asking for. And the thing that they're asking for is not what they should be asking for because they did something else. It's much, much worse, and they don't even realize it. So should I tell them? Or should I just say, I'm mochel? He said, I'm fine being mochel, but I just want to know, like, is that a problem for them? That they're not, they're burying the lead. They're not asking for what they really should be asking for. So in a certain sense, it should be brought out in a conversation at some point, because that person's own tshuva process should involve realizing just, how badly they hurt somebody and in what way they hurt somebody. In this particular case, it was not going to end well had he done that, so I advised him not to do that. Every case is a little bit different, but really that's a critical part of the tshuva process. Also, Rav Shturmbach, Ma'adim Uzmanim, this emphasizing Chelek Aleph of Ma'adim Uzmanim. I think he wrote Ma'adim Uzmanim when he was like 30 years old or something. He wrote that when he was a young man. But in certainly Chelek Aleph. In Chelek Aleph, he writes that the busha is part of the kapara. That's part of the kapara that a person gets. Also, Rabbi Warman, Zichron Levracha. You know who Rabbi Warman was? Rabbi Warman was the Rosh Yeshiva of Hank. But he was a huge Talmud Chacham, and he was a Rebbe in Hank his whole life. Huge Talmud Chacham. He wrote many, many Svarim, dozens of Svarim. I remember when I was in Yeshiva here, there was a guy in my class, Moshe David, who went to Hank for part of high school at least, and he was very close to Rabbi Warman, and he used to bring, every time Rabbi Warman wrote a new Sefer, he would bring it to Rav Shechter. And I remember Rav Shechter would get all excited about Rabbi Warman. Rabbi Warman was an Adam Chashvat. So in one of his Svarim, Rabbi Warman suggests, in fact, Rabbi Warman's most famous tshuva probably. I had a shayla a couple of summers ago. I got a call from a rabbi of a girls' camp, summer camp, for an all-girls summer camp. And they wanted to meet during the 9 days. So who's going to make the siyum? So they wanted to know if they could have girls make a siyum and be matir eating meat during the 9 days. So we happened to have been going to Marsha Kolel that day, so I saw Rabbi Willig, and I asked Rabbi Willig the shayla, and he said, Rabbi Warman wrote a tshuva that it's mutter, that would work. They could eat meat during the 9 days based on the siyum of a woman. And then I saw Rav Shechter a short time later, and I asked him, he said, Rabbi Warman wrote a tshuva on that topic. So that, I guess that's the famous tshuva of Rabbi Warman. But Rabbi Warman emphasizes the idea that it's difficult to admit wrongdoing, and being mavir al midosav to ask mechila is what actually affects the kapara, right? Kol mavir al midosav, mavir al kol pshav. So part of that is just overcoming, your own inclination to hide a little bit. The Pri Chadash points out that maybe the raya, that it's not about securing the mechila, but it's about going through the process, is the fact that you only need to ask three times. And then that's it. Then you're done. What do you mean you're done? The guy didn't forgive me. How can I be done? So it's not necessarily about securing the mechila; it's about going through the process of asking for the mechila. There is another approach in Achronim, and I think Rabbi Daniel Feldman has an essay in his first sefer, in his first English sefer, on this topic. He's written several Hebrew svarim, and I think to date three English svarim. So I think the first one, The Right and the Good, which is an excellent, excellent sefer, quotes a Tshuvas Devar Yeshua, Chelek Hei, Simchat, that thinks the exact opposite, that it all is about securing the mechila. And he says the raya is Tefillah Zaka. No one's going through any busha, no one's at, and or before Kriyat Shema Lamita at night. So he thought that that was, the Devar Yeshua thought that that might be a raya, that it's just about getting that mechila. In the Gemara Megillah Daf Chav Ches, the Gemara says, "Lo'asal al mitasi kilas chaverai ki adam arzutcho ki avasalik lepuria amar sharile l'kol man detzarim." That before you go to sleep, you would say that I'm being mochel whoever caused me any problems. It's not necessarily such a great raya though, because l'chora, that's not so much for the person you're being mochel as much as it is for you. Meaning that's about a person finding the strength to grant forgiveness, but it might not actually help the other party. Right? So we have these two possibilities, that it's about the process of asking for it, three possibilities. It's about creating shalom, whether anyone asks, just creating shalom, creating a sense that everyone's okay with each other. Or it's about the kapara of the process for asking for mechila, or it's just about securing that mechila. Now, in our case, where the guy wants written into the contract that this is binding, this agreement, and there are no tainas and beis din shalmaila, and it's binding. So certainly, the first one is not, you know, from the first perspective, he did nothing, because he still has very, very hard feelings over here. And from the perspective of the second one, that it's about going through the busha of asking, that also l'chari did nothing. If it's about granting, you know, just getting that that mechila granted, and he's willing to sign on the dotted line for that, so then maybe it would work. So that might be a nafkamina between these possibilities. Also, if you ask for a mechila in a way that there's no embarrassment, you ask through a shaliach or a text where you don't have to look the other person in the eye. So does that take away from the bakashas mechila? If it's like Rav Shurbach understood that it's the kapara of having to embarrass yourself and speak to the person, so maybe that takes away a little bit from it. But if it's just about securing the mechila, as long as the person says, yeah, of course, no problem, or something like that, then you'd be okay. The Ramban, Siman Tav Resh Vav, in Sif Aleph, and the Mishnah Berurah over there, the Ramban writes, let's see if I have it here, the Ramban writes, yeah, the Shulchan says aver shvel mechaver in yom kippur mechaper hashefaisenu, that you need to be mefais the person and go once, twice, three times. Chol pam, take three people with you. Ve'meinu mespais b'shalosh pam imenu zakuklo. And if he doesn't listen after three times, it's not your problem. Miu yomer achkach lefnei asar shabikish menu mechila. You should announce in front of 10 people that you were mevakish mechila. And then the Rama says at the very end, by the way, v'mehotzi alav shem ra, einu tzarich limchala. That you know, if it's your Rebbe, you gotta go so many times till he's misfayez. Rama says amochel should not be nachzari milimchel. You shouldn't be difficult. You should be accepting of someone's apology. But then he makes these two exceptions: imlo shemechavim l'tovas hamevakeish mechila, v'imhotzi alav shem ra eino tzarich limchel. Two exceptions: that if it's for his own benefit that I'm not being mochel him, because I think he needs to contemplate what he did and realize that it doesn't just disappear like that. So, and it's like a chinuch moment. Now you have to question whether you are the one that's appointed to be the mechanech of all of your chaverim or your parents or whatever, right? In the other direction, parents to a child, a rebbe to a talmud. So a chinuch moment, says the Rama, or imhotzi alav shem ra. Now on that line, the Tovas HaMavakish says in Mishnah Berurah, that you're trying to break a person's habit, so you have to shake him up a little bit. Wow, says Mishnah Berurah, even when it's called for to not grant mechila, in your heart you should have granted it already. just give him a hard time so that he can go through the process. So l'chora, this would be a nafkamina also. The Aruch HaShulchan thinks that this halach is not practical at all. He says, "Be'emes gam kol hashana muzral ze lo laniach halach hazman." He says, you know, don't delay in giving mechila at all. Demi yodea ma yulad yom. You don't know what the next day is going to bring. Even though we pass on halach l'zman mu'at, we're not cheshin in the misa. We're in l'zman meruba, we're cheshin in the misa. But you never know. We don't know what the next day is going to bring. But erev Yom Kippur, it's a chov alasos kein. You shouldn't be an avzari. And then he says, Mimidas chasidus limchol gam bezeh, that it's a midas chasidus, even if you know that he was motzi shemra on you, to still be mochel. On the previous line, where it says you're doing it l'tovas ha-mochel, says Yaruch HaShulchan, ach be'emes lo shchiach tavizeh. This is not shchiach anymore. Meaning, it's not shchiach that a person is going to have such a kavanah, l'shem shemayim, that it's purely l'tovas ha-mochel. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan says. There's a fascinating comment in the Torah Tmima, in Bereishis Perachav, Pasuk Yud Zayin, on this topic. I'm just thinking maybe it's not good to go into the whole comment. All right. Yeah, let's just say this part. He says, at the end of his comment, he writes, He says, I have a raya to the Rama from the Gemara Tainis Tav Chaf and Beis. My subdol as Rabbi Shimon Shin is damin lo adam echad mechur biyoser. Amar lo shalom alecha Rabbi. Lo hechsel lo shalom. He sees this very ugly guy, and the guy says shalom alecha Rabbi, and he doesn't respond. Amar lo kama mechur also ish. Wow, you are so ugly. Then he realized, no, that's not so polite, probably. That probably wasn't a nice way to talk. So he asked Mechila. And the guy didn't want to be Mochlin. So it's a riot to the Rama. Rama gets it from that Tosis. That Eliyahu HaNavi can't be Mochlin. Because Eliyahu HaNavi could be in such a position, so limchalo kadesh lo yargu b'davar. So vehinein devrei harama upela al poskim shlo hiirim yisef. Now normally when the Torah Tmima says like pela al poskim or whatever, it either is in poskim. Torah Tmima wrote the whole book without any svarim in front of him, so it either is in poskim or it's not such a pela, right? But over here it's mamish a pela, right? It's v'mesh taisus that said that exact kind of situation. That's why he wasn't mochel. So l'chora that's a good source for the Rama. Now, what about this whole Bezin Shalmaila business? Let's finish up this Shaila, and I'll just mention quickly the other Shaila. What about this whole Bezin Shalmaila business? So I asked both Rav Schechter and Rav Willig about this, and they both said, look, Bezin Shalmaila is maskim to a psak din of Bezin Shalmata. But in this case, there's no psak din. There's no Bezin Shalmata. This guy is just forcing you to say that you're mochel, otherwise it's going to cost you a lot of money. So he said, it is more like it's like Taliyu of a Zavin, that the person is being forced into this, even though Taliyu of a Zavin Zvini Zvini, but it's more like, he's just using that as a melitza. That doesn't mean anything. You have no choice but to sign. You obviously don't mean it. He knows you don't mean it. And he thinks that there's a shortcut, up in Shemayim, that you can take a shortcut to be able to get your Olam Haba instead of actually asking for Mechila and actually doing real tshuva. And guess what? There are no shortcuts in life. That's the Maisa when on Shavuos, Rabbi Shai Shechter spoke in my shul, and Chevra came over to me afterwards and said they were so moved by this Maisa that he told. He told the Maisa about Rav Eliashiv, that when Rav Eliashiv's great, great, great grandson was born, Rav Eliashiv is still alive. So 5 generations is a pella, but you're seeing that a little more often. My great niece has 2 great great grandfathers, Kananahari. Like it's an unusual kind of situation. Rav Eliashiv had great 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 grandson that was born. When the child was born, Rav Eliashiv said, I may be kosher le'edos, for him. Like, I'm not sure if it's like a close enough relationship. So, but they asked him to come be sandik, and he said no. I'm busy learning, that's all Rav Yashu ever did. You brought the baby to him to be sandik, but for whatever reason they weren't bringing the baby to him. And the Maisa goes that they said, but don't you know it's a school that you go straight to Olam Haba? It's written in some, one of the Kadmonim, that if you're a Sandik on a great-great-great-grandson, that you go straight to Olam Haba. So Eliyahu said, when I go to Olam Haba, it's not going to be through the back door. I'm going in through the front door. That's how I'm getting into Olam Haba. So there's a mila in that, and being able to go in through the front door. So this guy thinks he could put a clause in the contract where he's going to get into Olam Haba through the back door. It's ridiculous. Generally, you can't lie, right? Generally, you shouldn't sign in something that's not truthful. But I asked Rav Shechter about that. How can he sign in this if he's not really being mochel? He said lying is more of a midos thing. And when it comes to midos, you're supposed to do what is right. And it seems that the right thing to do in this case is to just make this dispute go away and sign this this agreement. The downside, of course, is that you're preventing him from doing proper tshuva, because he's going to falsely believe that he's absolved of his sins. But I don't know if that's your cheshbon. I mean, that's probably that fellow's cheshbon. Again, this is assuming that the case as described to me is accurate, even after hearing it from only one side. Just for a second, on the other case of delaying an aveira till after Yom Kippur, I think the answer is pretty partial. Whenever you have a choice, should I do an aveira now or should I not do an aveira now? Whatever the other option is, don't do an aveira now. So if you think you're going to do it after Yom Kippur, you're not going to do it. Hopefully you won't do it after Yom Kippur. Hopefully you'll have such a good Yom Kippur that you won't do it. But the choice is always don't do the aveira right now. So I think that's a lechora of davar pashut. Everyone shalom chesiv chesiv tova, good gemar shiur. And next week we will not meet, but after Yantif, and stay tuned if we change the time or not. I'm not sure yet if we're going to switch to 7:30.